Hello, this is Rob Gellis for today's Rob Around the County, and I am interviewing the president of the board of directors of the Roelof Janssen Historical Society, Leslie Doyle. Thank you very much, Leslie, for coming on my show today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Maybe you could discuss how the society came to be, their mission, and bring an example, maybe something historical that we could talk about.
Well, the society began in 1974 and was formed by a group of people who really felt that this was something very necessary as a means of preserving the history of the area. It was started in 1974 in anticipation of the celebration of America's bicentennial in 1976. And the thing that binds us all together is the Roelof Janssen Kill, or Roelof Janssen River, that starts actually up in Austerlitz and winds its way through what's called the Roelof Janssen area and ends up being a major tributary to the Hudson River. So, and our namesake, which is maybe a good place to start, was a Scandinavian explorer and farmer, basically, who was brought over to work for Van Rensselaer in the early 1600s and is attributed with having found what's now the Roelof Janssen Kill. And he was an interesting guy. He worked up in the Albany area and then eventually wended his way down to Manhattan, was given 62 acres of farmland along the Hudson River, died, and his very feisty wife, Annika Jans, remarried after being widowed to Everardus Bogardus, who was the first Dutch Reform minister in Manhattan, what became Manhattan, which was then, of course, New Amsterdam. Anyway, so they have a wonderful, interesting history and were very, very early settlers up in the Albany area and then down in New Amsterdam. And that is our namesake.
Very interesting.
And all of this can be found on our website, this very fascinating story.
Okay, well, you have developed quite a, your website has so much information, visually, audio, and visual. It seems to be, one that I looked at was a little documentary on Hillsdale.
Yes, and I should actually credit Peter Nicholas Fritsch with the maintenance and the creation of the newly revised website, and he really keeps it very much up to date, and he's also my husband, I'm proud to say, and a board member of the Roelof Janssen Historical Society. And the project that I believe that you're referring to was known as the Hillsdale Oral History Project. It was started by my predecessor, Peter Chipkowski, who was the president for several years, and he worked with two Hillsdale residents who have long been in the area, Julia Brandy and Marilyn Harrington, and you've probably heard of Harrington's. It's a very well-known store in the area. And the three of them began not only recording the oral history, but actually videotaping it. And the product, after about 5 years of very, very hard work and fundraising, which was mostly done by them, and of course we supported them in every possible way as one of our five towns, and they created not one, but two documentaries, which really tell many different aspects of the area, and it's beautifully illustrated. It has lilting, dulcimer music in the background, and it really goes to folks who have lived in the area for a very, very long time, and it explains the origins of Hillsdale, what's significant about Hillsdale, which is just about... So the museum, I should hasten to say, the Historical Society Museum, which is in a repurposed historical Methodist Episcopal Church in Copake Falls, which is part of the town of Copake. So Hillsdale is maybe 5 minutes to the north of us, and it's got a really incredible history and is one of the larger towns in the area. And what else can I answer about this? It's a wonderful thing to watch. It's available. Both parts of it are available on our website. And it's just and I think that it's going to spur further oral history projects, including one that we hope to do in the near future about Boston Corner, which is now part of ANCRM, and which has its own very unique and amazing story.
What you're doing is fabulous. I mean, that's something that was interesting in Hillsdale is that you have a lot of photos from the 50s.
It's really, it's first-hand history. No, it's really, and the fact that the folks are still around with these long, long memories, and it's very important with these types of history to do it now. You can't wait necessarily because some of the interviewees are elderly, and so we've got to capture that history while we can.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say another way that we've tried to capture some of the local history was through when we were faced with the pandemic, as has everyone else been. We had to postpone our planned summer show from last summer to the following summer. We'll fingers crossed that we can have it then. But we started something on our website that's right next to the section about the Hillsdale oral history, and that is Pandemics of the Past and Present. And that was another way that we hoped to, and did in fact, capture memories of the local population. And it's called Pandemics of the Past and Present, Remembering the Resilience of the Rojan Region. And what we asked people to do, first of all, we had a lot of information about the nature of a pandemic as opposed to an epidemic, and the fact that Columbia County has always been hit. In fact, the city of Hudson has been hit very hard by pandemics historically because it was a port city like New York City was. So we had started a blog, or a weblog as it's really called, and asked people to write in their memories of past pandemics such as polio, or if they had family lore about the Spanish flu of 1918. And then we also asked them to write about their current experiences with the pandemic of now, of the COVID pandemic, in terms of, you know, if they were feeling isolated, how it prompted it, how one kind of activity or socialization ended and they discovered the beauties and wonders of their garden, or doing volunteer work, or taking long walks through the countryside, which is, you know, a great privilege that we have in this area. So that was another way that we've tried to capture local history from the people, you know, from people themselves, firsthand.
And these people, this is all over the phone, this oral?
This was actually, they wrote in.
Oh, all read in. So,
yeah, so, and a blog is a weblog, so.
Okay.
We cited examples of, for instance, the one that I wrote, which I think appears first, was really based on a memory book from the 19th century, and how important it is to log our memories. And a blog is just an online way that people could either email in their stories or they could just enter them themselves. So that's just another way that we're trying to capture oral history.
I want to know, do you have the library down there? Do you have links through them too for people?
We have actually on both the pandemic section and elsewhere on the website, we have a link to a wonderful, I'm glad you brought this up, a wonderful oral history project that was initiated by Peter Sapowski, who was the former president of the Roelof Janssen Historical Society, and he was also a longtime town supervisor of Hillsdale. And he hooked up with the library and interviewed many, many people in the area who are in positions of leadership, who worked, you know, all sorts of people. So that's something that you can access on the Pandemics Past and Present section of our website. And it's well worth watching. It has, you know, people from our local Grange organization, Roelof Janssen Historical Society, from Tamara, from the library itself. So it's something well worth watching. So he spoke to, I think, something like 30 people. And it was really sort of focusing on how they and their organizations were dealing with the pandemic.
You could talk about a little bit about the museum?
Sure. So the museum is, as I mentioned before, in a repurposed church that was built in 1892 and functioned for about 63 years. It was a Methodist Episcopal. It's one of three churches that were in the small hamlet of Copake Falls, including the St. Bridget's, which, alas, is torn down. That was the Catholic church, but it has been rebuilt as Our Lady of Hope. St. John in the Wilderness, which is Episcopal church that's still functioning, and it was actually designed and built by Richard Upjohn, who was a very famed architect who was responsible for the design of Trinity Church in Lower Manhattan. And then you have our little church that, as I say, opened in 1892, functioned for many years, for over 60 years, and then was closed. And it sat empty for about 30 years, and then was resuscitated in the 1980s. Town supervisor Alfred Neer was sort of the pioneer in this. The early Roland Jansen Historical Society that had been established already in 1974 took a great interest, and the local population. So eventually, the church was purchased by the town of Copake, which still owns it and lets us use it as our historical society museum. And it's an incredible exterior and interior. And by the way, until the 6th of January, we have decorated it to the hilt. So please, you know, stroll or drive by it. And it's beautifully lit up and decorated inside and out. So you can't go in, but you can look in the windows. So it's very festive and pretty. And it was Alfred Neer's ambition that the Historical Society should move in, you know, use the space for storage of artifacts from the area that are in a climate-controlled storage facility. We keep a very active collections file and archive. And every summer, during the winter, I should say, during the winter, spring, and fall, we have events there. We have the Winter Walk in December, which we couldn't have this year, hence the decoration of the church for people to enjoy from the outside. And then in the fall and the spring, we have usually three presentations that are given by lecturers and historians, people with specialized knowledge, and they speak. And the audience sits in the original pews of the church, which are removed in the summer so we can use the interior of the church, former church building, as an exhibition space, which is open from June through August. Yeah, so it's really, we're very, very lucky to have this wonderful building. And it's also a wonderful way to preserve a historic building.
Yeah, so yeah, it's the not just the building and the history that's there for the communities.
Come the repository of local history in many ways.
The communities, when you go back to the beginning, most of them settled in the same sort of time period?
I believe that they, well, you can look at we have a section of the website also that has the five towns and their basic histories, but they were settled pretty much around the same time. And as I said earlier, really settled around the Roelof Jansen River. So grist mills used for transforming flax into linen, you know, many industries developed along using the water power of the Roelof Jansen River. So I would say yes.
So it's agriculture plays a big part.
Agriculture, absolutely, and it's still very, very agrarian in the area, and also the industries that formed along the Roelof Jansen River. Iron, the area was very rich in iron and lead. So Ancrum, which was called Lead Mines, still has a functioning factory along the Roelof Jansen River down in Ancrum, which is now a paper mill. So, and we have in Copake Falls, which was sort of the economic engine for the area, we had a very active ironworks, which is now a museum, which you can visit, one of the largest blast furnaces. It's not entirely complete, but it's in a wonderful state of preservation, and it's part of Taconic State Park, which our museum is right on the border of in Copaic Falls. So that makes a wonderful place to visit as well, and that was really what brought a lot of people to the area to work at the ironworks. And we have now, as part of Taconic State Park, we have a wonderful, what they call the ore bed swimming hole, and that's a very popular site in the summer, but that's where they mined the ore that was used in the manufacture of all sorts of mostly agricultural tools, including something called the chill plow, which was quenched in a certain way that made it very desirable and very very sharp and resilient. So it was very popular. It was sold nationwide. So it was both agrarian, which it still is, and then there was the industry of the ironworks. When the ironworks closed, the area was like, oh my gosh, now what are we going to do? And fortunately, two families came together and donated thousands and thousands of acres, which have become the Taconic State Park. One of the families was the Masters family, and Edgar Masters, who's a descendant, is still very involved with the ironworks and the museum there.
I'm trying to think anything else of interest. Maybe a particular story that we could...
Well, one of the things that we were going to, that has been postponed until the summer of 2021, so we're keeping our fingers crossed for this, was a show that we had been in the process of creating for this past summer, and it's called Revived in Wood, the Greek and Gothic Revival Churches of the Rojan Region. And I think this was... there are about 18 wooden churches left in the area, and we were going to do this show that would focus on the nature of Greek and Gothic revival to begin with and how it was transformed into wood because wood was so abundant in the area. So there are about 18 to 19 churches left in the area, so this will be, I should say, to put it in a positively reframe it, this will be a really wonderful way of focusing and bringing together all the five towns, because each of the five towns has at least one wooden church left in it. And we thought that, and this was largely based on a book that was published by the Columbia County Historical Society in Kinderhook a number of years ago, and it's by the photographer Arthur Baker, and it focuses on the wooden churches of Columbia County. So we've kind of focused it in, and we've been in touch with Arthur and his lovely wife, and they've been very supportive of this project. And what he did was he photographed each of these churches for posterity, including the 18 that are left in our area. And we thought this would be a wonderful way of sort of outreach and being inclusive of all the five towns in a show of this nature. And then it's also a very wonderful venue is the museum, which is one of those churches that Arthur photographed. So we're looking very much forward to that project and the programming surrounding it.
And I know the Upton churches...
Richard Upjohn?
Yeah, Upjohn.
I think there's one down in Amenia, which is in Dutchess County, not
okay.
In Columbia County. But Richard Upjohn was the designer of St. John in the Wilderness in Copaic Falls. And they believe that he was actually present during its, construction, which is very rare. Most of the churches were actually built from pattern books that different denominations put together, and the architects are mostly anonymous. But to have to have several Richard Upjohn churches in the area is a very rare and wonderful thing.
There's a lot. We just sort of scratched the surface. Because there's tons of stuff that your society has done, probably in the past, and on that website too.
Well, thank you so much. Articles are available on there about the history of including one that was about the old Copaic Falls Church, which is now our museum, and it appeared in the October issue of Main Street Magazine, which is published out of Millerton in Dutchess County, and they have every October they have a history issue, and they invited our organization to contribute an article. So that is actually on the website as well, under our...
Could you give to my audience your website so they can go and check it out?
Absolutely. So it's www and Rolf Jansen, jansenhs.org. And I'll spell Rolf Jansen for you if you like.
Yes.
That's ROELIFFJANSEN.
Can,
and you just add an HS at the end of that.
Can people communicate, or if they see something, can they?
Absolutely. We have a right on our website, we list our phone number at the museum and more especially our email. So it's right there on our website. And we're located, I should hasten to say, at 8 Miles Road in Copake Falls, New York.
That's off of the major route?
It's right off 22.
Right.
Route 22.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's right.
And it's right here on the front page. And I'm looking at the website right now.
I just think that it's great because other people who listen to the show might live in the communities that you serve.
And that would be terrific. And right at the bottom, become a member or donate. Our latest newsletter, and we have monthly newsletters, so you can see past ones. And you can sign up right on the website if you want to receive our newsletter. And our email is right at the bottom of our homepage, and I think of every page, and it's rolfjansenhs.org. Anyway, the email is right there on the website, and we will respond to you if you write to us.
And the newsletter, is it come out online? Or
Yes, it does. It does. We do still mail out some issues, special issues to, we mail them out, but it gets to be very expensive. So we really appreciate it if people can sign up for our newsletter.
And the newsletter can highlight events and different things?
It does. All our programming is there. Bits of local history. We had, in fact, you will find on the newsletter, we were very fortunate to have been awarded a Pomeroy historic marker that commemorates the fact that we were put on the National Register of Historic Buildings in 2012. So, and we, as I say, if you email us, we will email back to you. And we also love to receive donations of historical artifacts, letters, postcards, clothing to some extent, and things to do with the local, the railroads up here were very, very important. So the Harlem Line, as I'm sure you know, used to run up from Grand Central Terminal all the way up to Chatham. And in the early 1970s, the service was cut off in this area and now only goes to Wassaic. But the good news is that the former railroad has now been turned into a rail trail that will eventually go all the way from Wassaic to Chatham. And it's quite beautiful and well worth a trip to the area. And it's called the Harlem Valley Rail Trail. And that's been a very exciting, and I should also hasten to say that one of the founding members and former president, Eleanor Mettler, was one of the major forces behind the creation of the rail trail. It's just a wonderful success story and wonderful to visit and walk along or bike or walk your dog.
Very nice. Leslie, I want to thank you so much. I was talking to Leslie Doyle, president of the board of directors of the Rolf Jansen Historical Society. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your interest, and I hope you'll all come and see us and look us up online.
Yes.